Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we head to Fishtail, to Montasia, where food is inspired from Montana and Malaysia. Here we watch Chef Lee Johnson on Food Network's culinary competition, Chopped. He faces off with three other chefs to compete to win $10,000. Hosted by food personality Ted Allen, competitors receive baskets with mystery ingredients to turn into an appetizer, entree, and dessert. Tonight, Chef Lee steps into the arena, season 61's Mizuna Mitada, with knives drawn, seasoned with a Montana attitude. This 2024 James Beard Foundation semifinalist for Best Chef Mountain is put to the test by judges Alex, Mark, and Jet. In the old cowboy bar owned by Chef Lee and his wife Yoki, the audience of about 50 people are first served a salad inspired by the ingredients from the first mystery basket. The surprise ingredients included Mizuna, a crab rangoon pizza, cherry drink mix, and salmon fillets.
You have cherry Kool-Aid in the salad dressing. It's a cherry and mustard salad dressing. There's organic Michigan tart cherries to kind of up the factor of the Kool-Aid fake flavor. And then you have cherry cured salmon crudo. It's sort of like an Italian person tried to make spicy salmon. So it's tons of fresh basil, tons of fresh fennel. There's bell peppers, really good mustard, French whole grain mustard, really good olive oil. And that's what's in that salmon mix.
Tonight's menu is accompanied with beers from Lee's Big Sky heritage and his experience in New York City, where he journeyed to compete. All eyes are now focused on one of the two television screens in this historic bar, infused with new flavors and ways.
Show comes on at 6. Really excited. Thank you guys.
The next day, Lee and Yoki come to Yellowstone Public Radio to talk to me in the studio. So you're the first Montana chef to appear on Chopped. I think that is just really awesome.
Yes.
So congratulations on that. And then the name of the show, Mizuna Mitada.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Mizuna comes from one of the four secret ingredients in the first round. That's the appetizer round.
I made the executive decision to pretend that I knew what Mizuna was, and judging by the crickets, you guys all made that kind of noise. Yeah, I had some yesterday. So that was the card I chose to play, as if I had any idea what Mizuna was. Turns out to be Japanese mustard greens.
It looked like arugula, so I was thinking spicy, peppery, like arugula. And I'm sure Mitada's just a play on words, because there wasn't anything particular. Isn't Hakuna Matata like a Hawaiian expression?
I found that it was the Swahili word for trouble or entanglement. So it could be like the Mizuna mystery or something like that. So,
well, and all the competitors struggled with the first basket.
Right.
But the first basket had Mizuna is already kind of challenging. And then it had cherry drink mix or cherry Kool-Aid.
Yes.
And then it had a full crab rangoon pizza.
Which I thought was crazy.
Yeah, it was for me. There was a clown car effect where I opened the basket and there's a pizza in there. And for a minute, I can't even process how they got the pizza in there. What is that?
You know? But then you had beautiful pieces of salmon.
Yeah. Really nice fillets of salmon. So
you don't know ahead of time. See, everybody goes, you know ahead of time what you're going to be getting, right?
What you see is really what you get as an experience. I was wondering on some of the shows, like, surely they did a recipe breakdown. Because there's no way all these people have Japanese cheesecake dialed up in their mental Rolodex, you know, for example, or whatever it might be.
Right, right.
But this show, the only extra time you get is you get like 1 minute that's not reflected in the show where they're taking photos of the basket.
Okay.
So the 20-minute appetizer round is really kind of like 20-minute plus one planning time.
Okay.
So you get like 21 minutes, but other than that, it's go, go, go. They don't stop that clock. And one girl got cut pretty bad in the first round, and they don't stop the clock. There's a safety team that inspects all the food to see if there's any traces of blood, and the safety team takes the contestant and makes sure they're okay.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Yep. So they bandage you up, and then the show goes on again.
Yeah, show goes on.
God, that's crazy.
Yeah, they don't stop it. If the judges shout at you, you have to stop what you're doing and talk to the judges.
Chef Mark and Chef Alex were both on my hope they're not there list. And when I walked around the corner, you saw Chef Mark and Chef Alex. Chef Mark, the whole time, you have to stand there a lot for shots. And Chef Mark was doing what we call in Albuquerque, mad dogging me. So I'm just sitting there, and I feel like someone's looking at me, and I look over, and he's like this. And I'm like, is he looking at me? Okay. And he's kind of an intimidating dude. So I'm like, okay. And I look at Chef Jet, and I get a nice smile. And then I look back at Chef Mark, and I swear to God, he was closer. I found out later, everyone was really concerned because a host wasn't there. He had something happen that morning, he got stuck in traffic, so through the magic of TV, they put him there, but he showed up well into the filming.
Oh my.
And we had to go back and loop in a bunch of takes.
Okay, how did you receive the news about being considered to be on Chopped?
You get an initial casting call, and it's very much scouting, like seeing, is the phone, are you interested? How's your personality on the phone? My one note that they kept giving me through the audition process is that bigger. They'd say bigger. It's on TV. So you kind of have to have, like, newspaper or TV voice. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I tried to Casey Kasem my answers a little bit, like, Fishtail's a real small town. Y'all here, you know?
God, that name. So, okay, so they called you up, right?
Yeah.
On your phone. It was on your cell phone. You got the call.
Yeah.
And then, so how long did that call take, the initial one?
Oh, the initial one's like an hour.
How long did it take for you, Yoki, to finally find out about it?
I don't know.
She didn't know about it at all. I think I called her afterwards. It's like, you will not believe who just called me. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he had to, like, wait to hang up from them, from talking to them, and then call you up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Events as they happen.
I know.
And they let me call her live from the set, too.
I know.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I got to show her around the set a little bit.
I saw that. That's right. That's right.
It was really cute. She was screaming.
I know. I choke. It's like, oh, my gosh. I'm watching Chop. This is my poodle.
Yeah. She didn't know what to say.
And everybody's there waving at me.
Okay. So you had the casting call. And then they, again, called you back, like, several weeks later?
They call you back with another full casting team. And it's not, the Food Network doesn't meet until the third interview, which is a full hour-long Zoom or Skype video interview.
So they want to make sure that you can actually articulate or actually have a little personality and you're not this deadbeat introvert.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of people are unwilling to share, like, some of the backstory that went into the restaurant or challenges they might have. Chefs might not go on and admit the struggles they've had running a restaurant. And that's like maybe Fishtail prepared you for that because it's such a small village. Everyone knows, you know, we'll get texts from people. Is Rose supposed to be in this area? Like, she's out by the river, you know. I said hi to her. So everyone knows everyone's business.
At the watch party, it was evident that Lee and Yoki had been welcomed into the community of Fishtail and still have followers from when they operated out of a kiosk in Cook City. Kathleen Ralph and her friends have known the Johnsons for a long time.
Lee was into organic gardening. He helped redo my lawn. He is a Renaissance man. He can do everything from French cooking to Malaysian street food to organic vegetables.
Dot Gallagher was another ardent fan and supporter.
We went up to Cook City specifically to eat at their restaurant.
And Constance Smith watched the Johnson family grow.
I first met Lee and Yoki and Rose when Rose was 4 years old. And I met them at the library because she came to do a garden for the future, a little terrarium.
When the Johnsons bought the Cowboy Bar a couple of years ago, the change was difficult for the community. But Constance's husband, Robert, welcomes the new vibe.
You walk in this door and you know exactly how they feel about who you are.
For Diane Zignorachi, she stopped for a bite after a hike to Mystic Lake. She grew fond of Yoki and the restaurant to bring friends.
So we have Mass 4 o'clock on Sunday, so it was perfect after Mass to come to Montasia. So this is the St. Michael's table right here, and we come here every week.
Finally, Maddie Britt, who has worked at the restaurant for a short time, summarizes.
I love that they're super inclusive and they just kind of jive well together. The way that they act is really fun and you can tell there's a lot of love involved.
So now you know you're going to get on Chopped. How did you prepare for that? I know that, Yoki, you were like the head coach on this one.
I don't know, head coach.
Yeah, you were.
I just go back to all the episode and wrote down little tips here and there.
How many seasons are there?
There's like 950 episodes.
That's what I thought. You didn't watch all 950, did you?
Pretty close.
Some of them are kind of buried. They're hard to, streaming rights. Yep. Some seasons are harder to find than others, but yes. Yeah. I mean, so the kids shows.
Yeah,
we skipped those because
we
focused on ones that where the criteria might be more applicable to me as a professional chef. So all the adult ones, yes. When I was on stage too, Chef Alex was like, there's no way she watched every episode. And I was like, Chef Alex, you do not know my wife. Believe me, she watched every episode.
Yeah, my mom was here, so we tag team. You watch this, and I watch this part, and we compare notes.
So did you have, like, specific notes? Pet peeves of the judges,
absolutely.
Or what their favorite dishes, or what their dislikes were?
Yeah, their backstory.
Okay.
Yeah, things where contestants have said that went wrong for those contestants, things contestants have used to butter up this judge that went well for the contestant, ingredients you don't serve to specific judges. Yeah, it was like 52 pages, handwritten.
Wow. Wow. And so did you read them or did you like brief him?
Both.
Oh, both, yep.
All right.
Yeah. She has notes on me in general, and she's willing to give them and willing to elaborate.
She's very astute, observant, and very organized. So you had to get ready for the competition, which meant that you probably had some trial runs.
Yes.
All right. And how many is a lot?
Oh, you know, scheduling constraints, because when you run a restaurant, it's insane. And I'm homeschooling my daughter senior year, and we're caretaking her, managing all the cancer stuff that comes with that. So I am spread really thin. So it was funny because it often happened at like at 1 a.m. So my daughter would leave like Billings Outlaw dance training at like 9 p.m. in Billings.
Yes.
She'd stop by like Walmart because it's still open, and she'd pick up four random ingredients. And she'd come at 1 a.m. and I'd have to clean down the kitchen after a full service of Montasia and then recreate a chop. One of the segments, like a half hour or a 20-minute appetizer. And yes, she threw some crazy ingredients at me.
I did my own mystery basket for him because he was worried about the appetizer round, which is only like 20 minutes. He was just worried about that time constraint. So I got him a mystery basket of ice cream cake, pickled asparagus, I think, a cut of random beef, and then I think a random vegetable, and I put it in a mystery basket, and he cooked it, and it was wild and wacky and fun. And
oh, she threw the civet, the animal coffee, where the animal eats the coffee beans and poops them out. So I had poop coffee.
Oh, lovely. Okay, you had poop coffee, and what else went with that?
God, unfortunately, in that one, like, everything was brown.
Black garlic,
poop coffee, mustard, and some sort of toasted
quail egg.
Yeah, quail eggs.
Wow.
Yeah. That was really tough. I tried to make like a German schnitzel style dish. And I put the coffee in the gravy and with the mustard, and it didn't go well. There was a lot of fails. And I'm so glad I did the training, because in your head you think 20 minutes isn't that bad. But you forget, 20 minutes is in your own kitchen.
Yes. Well, let's go back. I mean, we talked briefly about that. You know, you had your cherry drink, you had your salmon, you had that crab rangoon pizza that was there. And
the Mizuna.
Mizuna, of course, the show itself.
Yeah.
So you had all these ingredients, and what did you end up making?
I knew I wanted to make a salad right away because I couldn't think of anything else to do with the cherry Kool-Aid other than a vinaigrette in particular.
Right.
One chef successfully turned it into a gastrique, which is really good call, and he turned it down with garlic. So the vinaigrette was a no-brainer between the Mizuna and the cherry Kool-Aid. The salmon, when I smelled it, I did not want to serve it raw because it was good salmon, but didn't smell sashimi fresh to me.
Yes.
It smelled like, you got to grill this. And that was a great call, and I knew I had to nail the salmon.
I did a lot of knife skills to remove the top of the pizza from the crust, and then I was going to slice the crust into long, spoke-like croutons, and I grabbed the crust and threw it across the room. Across the room like a frisbee golf putt, and I was left standing there. They really wrote me about how burned those things were. They talked about that.
And I'm sitting there, and the camera's panning to me and the pizza and seeing what I'll do with it. Will I be dumb enough to pick it up? Because several contestants, believe it or not, in Chopped history have picked up ingredients off the floor.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
There's 100 people in that room watching. I'm like, how are you going to get away with this? I kind of looked at the camera like, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's funny, the way they edit the judging, it comes across they were really harsh on how much I burned the crab rangoon.
The burners were on, off, off. So you could turn them off either way. So the whole, like, they edited that out. I seriously, out of the 20-minute round especially, 3 minutes. Like, what is happening? Because I thought I turned it off, and now it's on high. That's why it was burned. The burner, it's sort of like that Seinfeld where they have a backup alarm. And there was a moment where I was like, double-sided, it goes both ways. Why would you build a stove like that? Why?
That That's on the editing. In real life, the judges were very harsh to me for completely different reasons that didn't make the final cut. Like, I mixed the Mizuna with Frieze.
Okay.
Yeah, and they were baffled by that decision. And I, looking back on it, I don't even know what I was thinking. You're just going, you know?
Well, they have the shape, you know, there's some sharpness to the greens or some angularity design, you know, that kind of thing.
The Frieze was beautiful. I wanted it to add a sense of verticality to the presentation because it was falling flat otherwise. And in point of fact, when you see it on TV, it's, if anything, too vertical. The salad looks like it's bursting out of the bowl. It's a very Montana serving salad. When you see it, you can very much see, when you see the four plates lined up, you can see the chef that's from Montana. Because I'm putting down food that I would want to serve to my family. And I do that kind of consciously. You know, I can elevate. I can tweeze. I got tweezers.
Rose
bought me some ridiculous tweezers as a Christmas joke one year.
Okay. You didn't bring them.
No. And it's funny, they let you bring exactly 7 knives.
Oh.
That's it. You cannot bring tools. You cannot bring thermometers, own gloves. I wanted to bring my own gloves. You can't bring your own gloves.
All right. Okay. And you know, you talked about this 80 people. So when I was watching it last night, I did see like 4 people standing off on the side. But you're saying there are just people all over you.
Yes. It's the magic of TV. What looks to be this contained kitchen studio is one backdrop in this huge hangar of a studio. It is filmed in the Navy Yards in Brooklyn and the Electric Studios in Brooklyn. And another thing that didn't come across when you see the show is in the appetizer round. And so on the other side, like you're side by side with your contestants, almost like a stage, and out where the audience would be is an entire team of audio, visual, camera, gaffer people with cords, and the cords have to wind and traverse and serpentine each other because you're running the pantries at different times, and you get safety speeches about you cannot walk through this hallway because it's a camera hallway and we could run into you. And
the only thing I would really say that didn't come across on TV is the smoke was insane, but the whole studio is filled with smoke.
Because 2 people attempted to smoke the salmon.
Right, right. And the smoke gun was out.
The smoke gun was not hooked up correctly. Yeah. They didn't have the cloche. So it's just leaking smoke everywhere, and we're all coughing, and I'm burning the crab rangoon, and we're about to set New York City on fire filming this TV show.
And the smoke wasn't obvious on the show when we were watching it.
It's such a high studio. It just went up.
So course one is 20 minutes when we see it. How long was it actually for you? I mean, you had the 20 minutes to actually cook it, correct? But then how long did everything take for them to get the dishes so that the judges could try them?
Dishes go right immediately to the judges.
They do.
Immediately. They take them away from you so you don't do anything stupid like trying to touch them. And if you try and like sneaky sneak wipe a table or something, one of your production assistants like, they give you a look, you know, the librarian look. And you are escorted around the corner down that hallway, the famous hallway, the Walk of Shame hallway. And actually, while the judges are deliberating, you are sitting in that hallway.
Yeah. Oh, you are. So you're talking to each other. You're
ostensibly talking to each other, but you, of course, immediately perceive that you can hear the judges deliberating because they're maybe 5 meters away.
So you're trying to listen to what they're saying.
Whichever contestant they're talking about, we would kind of leave the group discussion and, you know, surreptitiously put our window ear to the wall, you know?
I would do that.
And you can totally hear them, and sometimes they get passionate.
So, okay, here you are standing in the hallway, and you, Yoki, appeared, you know, in the first clip. Did you have communication with Chef Lee again?
No, they let her in the previous day in the Navy Yard studio when I was filming my signature dish. You know, they used to come to every restaurant location when travel was cheaper and easier and film your signature dish at your restaurant. Now everyone's signature dish is filmed in the same, like, it's literally his basement of the Brooklyn Navy Yards.
So that's the magic of television.
Yeah, that's the day they tapped her in. The day of filming, you don't have your cell phone at all. They put it in this like anti-student device right away when you walk in there in the morning. So you are out of contact for the entire day.
So Yoki, how are you feeling?
I was very anxious, but the producer really likes Lee. So she gave me her number and she said I can text her for emergency purposes. So every hour go by, I was like, oh, should I text her? Should I text her? And Rosie's like, no, don't do it, Mama. Don't do it. But I still does it and she responds.
And what was your first message that you text?
She probably hasn't saved.
Oh, yes.
I think she's just constantly asking how I was doing.
Yeah, hopefully in a good way.
Yeah, she was worried about me. I could feel her worry from New York City. The producer team was really awesome, though.
So she sent me the first message was, morning, Yoki and Rose. I'm Kat, the producer over here at CHOP, and your spy on the ground today as Lee competes. I can't tell you anything substantial, but I'm here if you need to relay anything, even it's so excited.
Aw, okay.
She did. She kept relaying that to me. She'd pop in and be like, your family's still freaking out.
Yes.
Aw, I love that human part of it.
Oh, she was awesome. Yeah,
yeah, that's really good. Let's talk about the second round. I almost feel bad for the judges because the worse ingredients that you give the contestants, the more likelihood they could not have a good meal.
Yes.
You know, like, why don't you guys just get really great ingredients?
Yes.
So you had the fried spaghetti ball,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Mustard greens, Deteris Major, and coconut yogurt. So the rest of that sounded like pretty okay.
Yeah. It was irrelevant because the fried spaghetti was such my kryptonite that the other ingredients was just a no-brainer. The Deteris Major, when I saw that, I thought I might have a mole inside the Food Network who wanted me to win because that's quite famously the cut of steak that we served the most of that year. On the show, I wanted to be the most polite. I wanted to be the most fun because I didn't want Montana to have, like, the, you know, boring cowboy. I wanted to come in and be polite and fun, modern Montana, and I didn't want to mess up the beef.
Okay.
Because that's Montana. When you're a Montana chef, you have to cook the beef correct.
Yeah.
So I was really proud I did that. The two other contestants with me in round two struggled with the beef. And honestly, I talked them through it because immediately when I got it, I started breaking it down because I knew it takes longer than you think to cook because it's a thin steak, but it has these long muscle fibers that hold moisture really well.
Mm-hmm.
So it always per pound takes longer to cook than you'd think.
Well, and Chef Jet said something about if you don't get those fibers off, they turn into rubber bands.
Yes, and it balls up. It'll end up like a baseball-style cut. It'll be inedible.
So you should have hit everything, you know? Like,
I know. And one of the frustrating things looking back on it is like the fried spaghetti, the ingredient with which I was struggling the most, I had two other chefs and three professional chefs who were talking about that ingredient right next to me and what they were doing. And you're so in tunnel vision, you're so in your zone. They literally didn't even exist to me.
All right, we need to talk about this round. Here, Yoki had all these notes off 5,000 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a brain dead moment there.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
I knew it wasn't going well because I couldn't come up with what to do with the spaghetti. And I couldn't even like figure out how to match the different genres of cuisine because the coconut yogurt kept pulling me like Indian or something. And nothing else in the ingredient basket really matched with that. So I was just stuck in a mental loop. And for a while, I'm just doing busy work. I made a coleslaw with the coconut yogurt and the mustard greens. And it was a great call, but it came out a bit sweet. And I kept seeing, they put it front and center, almost like as a challenge. So within the Chopped lore, you are known to not attempt a few things. You're known to not attempt risotto because you physically can't do it in a half hour. You're known to not smoke things. That had already been broken in round one. So we've already broken a lot of taboos this day, and we see this pineapple there, and the pineapple you do not serve to Chef Alex. That's widely, any chef who prepares for Chopped knows this. But it kept like beckoning to me, like this challenge. And I literally thought to myself, if nothing else, even if I get Chopped this round, I can get Chef Alex to like pineapple.
And you did.
And I did.
She actually admitted. You know, there she was on camera with her face hidden between a piece of paper. Like, I think I like this.
Yes. You know? And it was awesome. It was one of my best moments ever. Chef Alex is so enchanting of her personality in person because she is so loquacious. And she comes up with these lines that she would think are rehearsed. But when you see what ends up in the show, she's got 10 bangers just as good that didn't end up in the show. So to get her to react like that, where almost the words failed her and she was just sheepishly hiding her head like a girl, you know, it was so cute. And it was a home run moment for me.
Yeah, no, congratulations on that. And she actually warmed my heart because throughout the show, she was a little hard.
Yes.
And then, she melted at that moment.
Yeah, she had one of my favorite quotes ever, and it was about Chef Michael. He also cooked risotto. And she said of his risotto cooking, you ran 100 red lights, but you didn't get a single ticket.
Oh, yes. That was a great
line. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. And then I knew I was in trouble because then I knew he had beat me, and I thought I might have him because of the risotto. But then when they tasted and liked his risotto, I was like, ooh, this is bad.
Yeah.
This is bad. Because Chef Soleil, a great gal from the Twin City area, a Venezuelan political refugee, I looked at her plate and I didn't know what the backstory behind it, but it looked amazing on the plate.
Yeah.
And I knew that my plating would be the most rustic and one of my most challenging aspects as a Montana chef. And so seeing that they liked his risotto and that her plate looked fire, I knew I was.
Well, and she undercooked her beef,
Yes. Yes, which I hoped might save me because when you see the show, there's no way the camera can hide that. That beef is still walking. mean, yes, that thing is still mobile.
It was still wild.
Absolutely. So,
I can see it.
Yes, but the other elements of her dish just tasted really good, I guess, so she took the day. I don't begrudge the result at all, but I'm proud that of the three renditions of that Terra's Major, I hit it out of the park.
When the three chefs came back into the kitchen and stood in front of the judges, Chef Lee was unfortunately eliminated. The last dessert round was Sandia Loca. It was blackberries, chocolate-covered coffee beans, and buttermilk pancakes. Just off the top of your head, what would you have done?
I love what Chef Mike did, and you turned the pancake into a vessel. So you turn the pancake into like a crepe. One thing that I used to do when I biked, I would make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but before I'd make the sandwich, I would roll the bread with a rolling pin until it was like as big and flat as a tortilla. So I think I would have done that to those pancakes. I would have pressed them in between wax sheets and rolled them so they were like a crepe, and then maybe re-crisp them. The blackberries, you chocolate coat them with the coating on the outside of the espresso beans. I would have left the beans behind and melted the chocolate off because those beans would have just dominated and they don't play well with watermelon. If there wasn't watermelon, you do coffee, but coffee and watermelon, you just ain't building a bridge between those two.
Yeah.
Sandia, of course, means watermelon.
Yes.
So Sandia Loco is a crazy Mexican street food where they cut a watermelon in half and stuff it with slices of said watermelon, which has been coated in tahine. And then Mexican street candy. And
yeah, they just even stuff
a
it
day and crazy stuff.
It's very festive looking.
It's really beautiful. So I think that you got to chop that and make a spicy watermelon sauce.
Oh.
The dessert round was another one where they were shooting for us. These are not easy baskets.
No, they're not.
In previous chop seasons, there used to be three logical ingredients and a wild card. And I've noticed in these new seasons, there's two wild cards and two ingredients.
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes it so much tougher.
Well, because you have people like Yoki who studies, you know, every episode, so you have to.
You know, it's like the chess move. They're adapting to our adaptations. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. So they have to make it more challenging.
Yeah, it's a competitive coevolution.
What's your secret to your amazing partnership to work together? And I always tell people this, if I was to work with my husband, I think we'd kill each other. But you guys have this genuine respect and love for each other. So what's your secret?
I just have so much love for Lee. And
I got a couple of core tenets that I live my life by, and I think this is something we discovered together. It is really counterintuitive when you know the rest of my personality, but a figure that impacted me a lot in my late 20s and early 30s was Dr. Laura. And one of her sayings
That's
was
true.
Always, choose wisely and treat kindly. And then as a bonus, if you treat them like you're still dating, then you'll have the healthiest marriage ever. So you send them flirty texts every now and then, you tell her how much you love her, and it's really easy.
Do journal every day about our relationship.
That's a new development. She's been journaling lately.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much is the cancer journey or the relationship journey or both.
Both. Mostly us.
It's been cool. I have noticed it increases your sense of gratitude about little things sometimes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm just very proud of him. I can't even sleep for days.
Yeah. When that 17-second trailer come out, just the trailer, 17 seconds, she stayed up all night just watching it on loop. I'm surprised she didn't get kicked off Apple, you know?
Very proud of him.
No, we are very proud. You know, congratulations on that. And daughter Rose holds the same sentiments.
I just feel really excited for him and happy. I've watched that show with my mom since I was like 10 years old. I love watching that show. So when he got the opportunity to be on it, I was super stoked and happy for him. And watching it is just like, I feel like I'm there and I feel that excitement for him. And it's just great. Yeah, I'm super proud of him.
Many congratulations to Chef Lee Johnson of Montasia, and bravo to Yoki and Rose for being such amazing team members. Music for Flavors Under the Big Sky has been provided by Parker Brown. As always, I thank you listeners for your support. I'm Stella Fong.